Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Around the Corner podcast. I am your host, Brian Heminger, joined today by fellow co-host Matt Schlichting, talking all things Cleveland Guardians prospects. Matt, how you doing today?
Great. I saw a hawk take a sparrow right out of midair. It was awesome.
Okay, that's pretty badass. I just saw like a lot of smoky haze today, so I've been indoors.
Yeah, I was breathing it when I was out on that walk.
But yeah, I'm like, if I'm going for a walk, I'll wait until it's like 11 p.m. maybe or something. But yeah. Oh, see, that's why that cough. Yep. That's that smoke right there. That's what you get. we've had a very exciting 2 weeks in the Cleveland Guardians system. There's been a lot going on. The short league seasons are well underway. We've had some players getting hurt, some players getting activated, a lot of top prospects putting on some impressive performances. So let's roll right into our top 10 prospect countdown and check in with how everyone has been doing. So first things first, Daniel Espino.
What can you tell us about him, Brian?
Not much to report. He had that surgery on his shoulder. He's still rehabbing. He'll be back hopefully next year. And I haven't seen any other updates. There was one about, 3 weeks ago, maybe, of him doing some like shoulder resistance exercises and stuff. So at least he's active. But other than that, there's not much to report.
We can only wait and see now.
Yep. Play the waiting game. Good news again. He's young. Young players have rebounded a lot better from the surgery he had than players near the end of their careers. So that's what we're crossing our fingers, because you look at how good our pitching prospects have done in the majors this year and just imagine adding Daniel Espino to that mix too. And it just gets wild. And pretty much the rest of our starting rotation becomes expendable of the veterans. So, and then maybe we can finally have a right fielder or at least one power hitting outfielder.
We'll see. Yeah. Might be too greedy.
And then moving on to the number two prospect in the system, looks like we might actually have something interesting to report on this one. So tell me all about Mr. Gavin Williams.
He earned his promotion to Major League Baseball. So we'll start with the minor league stats. In his last game for the Columbus Clippers, he went 5 innings, struck out 5, 3 hits, 3 runs, 2 earned, gave up 2 home runs and 3 walks, but obviously, Cleveland decided that he was ready to go in the show, and in his time, one start where he allowed 4 runs, and then another start where he did not allow any runs. It totaled out to 12 and two-thirds innings pitched, 5 hits, 4 runs, 4 earned, 1 home run and 4 walks, 10 strikeouts altogether, and you actually had the privilege of getting to see him in person, I believe.
So me and a buddy drove down and got to watch Gavin Williams' MLB debut. When he did his first bullpen right before the game, doing his first warm-up pitches, I was literally standing about a foot behind Bo Naylor, behind the netting.
Just the best spot to stand. I love standing there, my Heritage Park.
And, yeah, and watching the pitches come right at me, it was terrifying. He effortlessly was throwing like 98, and I'm just like, oh my God. Like, and I took like a very short video of one of his warm up pitches and put it on Twitter, and like it blew up. So yeah, it was a great time. I mean, Gavin didn't have his best stuff. He was, he would get ahead of guys. He'd get 2 strikes on them. And then Oakland had a really good approach, and then they would, either take that out pitch that he was trying to throw, or they would, make weak contact. He got BABIPped in because he only gave up his 4 runs. He gave up were all in one inning, and the one guy got like a 80 mile an hour exit velocity double down the left field line. And yeah, another guy got a bloop single, and then he did hang a curveball that got blasted for a 3-run home run. But that was really the one bad pitch he made all day. Like, overall, he was actually really exciting. He was throwing 98 miles an hour to start, and by the end of his outing, he was a little bit more in the 93, 94 range. But he showed in his last start that I did not get to see that he can keep that high velocity deeper into a game and pitch 7 shutout innings, 1 hit. So
it was a very nice game.
Yeah. Just a couple extra fun things to add, not related to Gavin Williams, but I got to see Bo Naylor's first career hit. And that was awesome. They showed Josh Naylor on the Jumbotron immediately after, and he was just jumping up and down screaming. He was so excited.
Yes.
He was more like Josh Naylor had 4 hits that game, including a home run. And he was more excited for Bo's first hit than for anything he did that day. And the other hilarious thing that nobody else would recognize if they had been watching the game on TV, but I can report, is there was a moment, I think in the 2nd or 3rd inning, where there was a fly ball a little bit left of center, and Miles Straw caught it, and Will Brennan ran over towards him. And then the second Miles Straw caught it, Will Brennan ran, and he got almost to second base before he realized that there were 2 outs. And he had to turn around and walk of shame it back to left field.
Oh.
And nobody else was saying anything. And I yelled out, "There's 1 out left, Brennan."
Oh.
And he actually responded. And he just like shaking his head. He's like, "Fuck me." It was great. And then made like all, Sports Center top 10 catch that actually hurt his shoulder a little bit. So I don't know if he was making up for it or not, but I thought about yelling out, "You made up for it, Brennan," but he actually got hurt on that play. So I'm glad I didn't. So.
I might have been the kid once or twice, halfway to the dugout back in Pinto ball. So I can't imagine at the major league level, it's just got to be like you said, shucks.
Yeah. it was like everybody in the outfield was laughing. It was good though. We were just teasing him, obviously.
Yeah.
We love our Will Brennan. That was my main stuff to report. That was the most exciting. And then obviously they came back and won in the 8th inning, 7-6. So that was an exciting game.
The other thing I want to point out about Williams before we move on to a certain hitter, I loved his first start, even though he gave up those 4 runs, because he pitched great after that. And how often do we talk about, is this a guy who's going to be able to give up some runs but stay focused and get his team some extra innings so they have an opportunity to win? This is his first start, and he did it. How cool.
Yeah, his pitch count was really high after, I think, 3 innings. And I think in the 3rd inning was when he gave up the 4 runs. And his pitch count was like almost 70. And I'm like, well, he's almost done. And his next 2 innings were like 13 pitches combined. And he just went breezed through him. So, and then I think he finished at 5 2/3, got pulled with after he walked a guy in the 6th inning. So, yeah, it was a great start. And just one bad little stretch where, he got bat-bipped and they were actually able to string some hits together. But, overall, the only issue that he had that game was the 4 walks. And it looks like his command was a lot better this last time around, too. So
I'm excited to see the next one, all of them. Our next man on the list, George Valera.
Yeah. Now, Valera's numbers aren't great, but you got to remember, he is returning from injury. He had a slash of 152, 263, 182. The good news is that he is now activated and he's going to be playing in Columbus. So, if he can start warming up and, actually get to play for a little bit of an extended period of time, there is clearly an opening right now in Cleveland for somebody to either play center field or somebody to play right field and push Will Brennan to center and move Miles Straw to the 4th outfielder position. So let's do that.
I would love to see Valera go on a tear. I wonder if half of the time we've talked about George Valera, he hasn't actually played. That's kind of how it feels. So,
yeah, I mean, he did get 9. He got 9 games in. Now, his numbers weren't great, especially considering they were in the Arizona Complex League. but you know, did hit a double, did walk a few times, did not steal any bases this time around. So that, you know, not great considering, you know, he's coming back from a hamstring thing and you're hoping he'd be able to test it a little bit. But as long as he's healthy and playing, I'm just hoping and praying that he can settle in, because he hasn't had a chance to do that all season yet.
So the 17th looks like the day he made it back to AAA. So he did have at least one game in the complex league, but they also hit, are they on break in the International League right now?
I don't think so. So he's been at Columbus this whole time?
He had one or two games in the complex league.
Gotcha.
A transitional week for Valera. Who knows how the flight was?
Yeah, okay. So yeah, he only had one game in the complex league. So that would make a little bit more sense that his numbers haven't been great. I was like, if his numbers weren't great in the complex league, that's a little concerning, but it's more the fact that he's just settling in at AAA.
Well, at least he didn't have a Manoah-like performance.
Yeah. So we can at least thank our lucky stars in that department.
Kind of a similar line to Valera in that it was sad. 182, 345, 273 was his slash line. And when I say sad, it's like with a lowercase s, like, huh? It was a 70 WRC plus. BABIP of 200, so he was a little unlucky. The nice thing to see was that he still drew 9 walks against 8 strikeouts and leaned into 2 pitches while stealing 4 bases.
Okay.
Had a double and a home run. So a little bit of a down week, but you can probably attribute it to bad luck.
Yeah, looks like it with a BABIP of 200. So, yeah, that's...
I've been really excited about Rocchio for a long time, but looking at the way this season is going, maybe we can afford to be a little more patient with guys like him, especially mm-hmm. since we're sorting out Freeman and Arias on the Major League roster right now.
Yeah.
Baseball's weird.
And, you know, there's still several other really exciting players. Even, say, somehow... Rocchio doesn't work out, we've got like 8 other shortstop prospects. So that's always something to think about too.
Yeah. Moving right along, we have more exciting news about a prospect on our top 10. Mr. Bo Naylor.
Bo got called up. So he is officially in Cleveland. They DFA'd Mike Zunino. You know, I'm sorry. I wanted Mike Zunino to work out. It didn't. And Bo got called up and... took a little minute to settle in. I thought defensively, he's been great. Offensively, I did finally, as I mentioned, got to see that first hit. Then he had a 2-hit game, you know, a day or two after that. And he's got a hit already today. So he is starting to warm up that bat. I can't wait to see his first, like, mash. Like, whether it's just, you know, a double or something, or he blasts one. I think it's coming. He is starting to get more comfortable at the plate. And then behind the plate, I think he's already gunned down like 4 or 5 base stealers, including 2 last night. And Matt finally did just see the highlight from last night when there was an attempted pitch out and Trevor Stephan threw the ball like 5 feet away from where Bo was standing. And Bo had to dive back towards home plate, do a 360, and then threw an absolute seed and gunned Nicky Lopez down by a mile. It's like the most athletic catcher play I've ever seen.
He shuffles to the right for the pitch out, ends up having to reach all the way across, snags it, then he's got his back to the plate for a second, gets that back foot down, turns, fires. It's a beautiful thing. Everyone should go watch the replay of this, and just watch his feet. It's a very good baseball play, and we love to see it. Hamilton on the radio gave it a good minute and a half, just pointing out this. You could tell he's not sure he'd ever seen it before. It's that good a play.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Just absolutely sensational. All the talks about Bo Naylor needing work defensively were a smokescreen to just try to delay him debuting until his Super 2 deadline passed. That's pretty much what it was.
I mean, we knew. But it's nice to see a play like that, regardless. He's here. Rejoice.
And he's spectacular. So, love me. Love me some Bo. So, yep, moving on. Let's talk a little bit about another middle infield prospect, Angel Martinez.
He had an interesting week.
Let's hear it.
He slashed 167, 200, 271. that's good for a WRC plus of 24. And that's the Eastern League. He's still at the Rubber Ducks. Is that right?
Yep.
Cool. He had a bad 184. That's not a good time.
No, that's it's unlucky right there.
Couple of doubles, a home run mixed in with five singles, drew a walk, struck out 9 times, got hit by a pitch and stole 2 bases. Hustle points. We like it. I guess the only thing to get really mad about, given how unlucky he was on balls in play, is the lack of walks. But if I'm remembering correctly, he's not necessarily a big on base type hitter.
Yeah. Judging from his, at least history, is he's not somebody that is like consistently drawing a ton of walks. Now his strikeout rate isn't super high, which is good, but you know, the walk rate, I mean, he's no Oscar Gonzalez, but
fair.
So he'll take a walk, but he doesn't like go out of his way looking for one. So, you know, that walk rate isn't going to be like, I don't think much higher than ever 10%.
Just giving a quick glance at his numbers at AA last year compared to this year, he was up for 103 games, posted a slash line of 244, 356, 451. Very nice. So a little bit of a step back through 294 plate appearances so far. He's at 219, 298, 338. We'll see what he does from here.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about adversity before, and it's interesting to see how guys respond. Perhaps it is his test now.
Yep.
Show us. Chase DeLauder is the next man on our countdown.
Yeah, and if this man had played more games, he'd be in our top 5 of the week for sure.
Yeah, this is a fun line. Because
in 4 games, he slashed 462, 563, 923. Now, again, also, he was doing rehab assignment in the Complex League, so playing below his level. So that also factored into why we did not put him in our top 5 of the week. But as our top draft pick from last year, looking healthy and putting up numbers like that in a level he's supposed to put numbers up like that, it's very good to see, like extremely good to see. So I am ecstatic to see him having some success. He had 3 doubles. He hit a home run. He stole 2 bases. The foot looks good. If you didn't see, I think today they announced that he will be activated and be going straight to Lake County.
Excellent.
So skipping Lynchburg, going right to Lake County, which I think he's going to have some success. So cannot wait to see his full season debut.
If you're 18 and you're coming in, throw a couple innings in the Complex League and it's Chase DeLauder and you see these numbers, like, what does coach say to you? Just keep it down.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, don't blame yourself. This guy is this guy's a freak. That's what I tell him. Like, just pretend that you're facing Barry Bonds or something. Like, it's definitely good to see. Now I just want to see what he does at Lake County, because that's a level that should at least challenge him. Like, is he going to settle right in and just start blasting, or is it going to take, you know, a little bit of an acclimation process like it's been for, you know, George Valera as he's recovered from injury and been in AAA. So just something to think about, but I am super pumped to see that he's healthy and he's playing and he's ready to roll.
I am too.
So moving on, we've got another pitching prospect, Joey Cantillo. How did he do over the past 2 weeks?
In 2 starts, Joey Cantillo pitched 11 innings, gave up 13 hits, 6 runs, 6 earned, 2 home runs, 4 walks, hit 2 batters. That'll teach him. Struck out 12 during that time. Had an ERA of 4.91, a FIP of 5.37, a WHIP of 1.55. We'd like to see the strikeouts. It's very good when you're still striking out 24% of the guys, but in this case, it's maybe just a home run thing, causing the overall numbers to rise a little bit. A decent number of hits sprinkled in there too, but we'll see how he continues to progress from here. It's nice to see him get the starts with McKenzie back up, although, oh, McKenzie.
Yep.
I feel like for him, for Cantillo, I mean, it probably makes a difference being the starter and starting the game. Well, like piggybacking, we've sung its praises, but I would think from a mental standpoint, being the starter and actually starting the game.
Oh, it's completely different
for him to get those reps moving up through AAA. This brings us to our number 9 man on the list, Juan Brito.
Yep. So if, for those curious, if Juan Brito was going to slow down after being promoted to AA, where he was a top 5 player of the week, or I guess of the 2 weeks in our last podcast. Now, he didn't quite make top 5 player of the week, but again, he was above league average. So in 10 games at Akron, he slashed a 286, 333, 457, hit a pair of home runs, which is exciting. Walked 3 times, struck out 5, was intentionally walked once.
Respect.
Yeah, and then had 8 hits. So not bad. That's, you know, if that's him, you know, I would take that any day of the week from a middle infielder. So rock solid numbers, especially considering he is one of the younger players in AA right now.
I forget how young he is from time to time.
Yeah, I think he's 21. So is he the same age as Angel Martinez? I'm going to check that. So Angel Martinez is also 21, and his birthday is January 27th. And Juan Brito is 21, and his birthday was September 24th. So Angel Martinez is actually 4 months younger. But Juan Brito entering the season had never played above single A, so low A, or I guess regular A. So they started him at high A. He was amazing. He got promoted to double A, and he's still been amazing. So personally, I think he's quickly becoming one of our top prospects in the system.
Where have they been playing Brito at?
Let's see.
Double A.
So this season he has played 15 games at second base. He's played 8 games at third. Or no, he's played 12 games at third between both levels. Primarily, he's been playing second base. He's got 33 games at second. Let's see, shortstop. 10 games at shortstop. But he has not played shortstop at double A. He did 10 games at shortstop at Lake County.
Hope what an interesting helps. Player.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him maintain batting numbers that could justify playing him at third, but then that bat at second, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, just imagine if, you know, for all the people worried about shortstop, you know, if he's really good second baseman, you could always just move Jimenez to shortstop, where he belongs anyway.
Things only get more and more complicated with this middle infielder situation, and I don't understand it, Brian.
I do. Amed Rosario needs to stop batting second and starting at shortstop every day. It's not that hard.
I know.
I don't know how every fan can see it, and you know the coaching and front office doesn't. But I just think at this point, you know, he has a video of like Tito murdering 7 people or something.
That's very murderous. Is it like a scooter accident in your head?
That's probably what happened. He just ran over a crowd.
Uncool, Tito. Uncool.
And Ahmed was the only witness and just happened to record it.
So for Ahmed's benefit, he has hit 310, 359, 369 in the month of June.
Yeah, because he had like 2 4-hit games and then every other game he struck out 4 times.
All the hits count, but yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4 games with 3 hits or more in June. But if you include May.
And every hit is pretty much a single. He's not hitting for any power.
Yeah, he is continuing to get better month after month, but I guess he's not quite playing at the level where you feel okay going, yes, this is our everyday shortstop. Because while the defense has seemed to improve.
No, he is the worst defensive shortstop in baseball.
I know. I was trying to throw him a little bit of a bone.
You can try to play nice, but I'm going to be the realist here. We have, I think, 6 people I would have starting shortstop over Amed Rosario at this point right now in our system. Yep.
It's like, as long as Rosario's on the team, we have to root for him to continue to hit well, because that's either going to help us win games or it's going to make him a more valuable trade asset for another team to help clear
If you want to make him a more valuable trade asset, they got to stop playing him every day and play him exclusively against lefties, which are the only pitchers he hits very well. Let's close things out with our top 10 prospect list. Welbin Francisca, one of our newest members, additions to the list. How did he do this past 2 weeks?
Welbin did well. He slashed .294, .385, .471. He is in the DSL, the Dominican Summer League. Not quite as catastrophic to opposing pitchers as he was the 2 weeks prior, but he still managed to hit a home run, had a triple, had a double, 5 runs batted in, 4 walks, 9 strikeouts, a couple of stolen bases. Kid looks good. He just turned 17.
Yeah, I'll take
it. Sky's the limit.
Yeah, this kid is an absolute monster. I saw something that just made me laugh. He had a game during this stretch where he had went, I think, 3 for 5, and his OPS went down. So that's the kind of performance he's been having. Is the OPS went down for a 3 for 5 performance where you batted 600 and on base was 600.
Regression is brutal.
So
I'm excited to have him on the top 10 list.
Yep.
It was initially your idea to add him, and especially after this couple of weeks, he's just going to be so much fun to keep an eye on as he makes his way through.
And I think I've already got a candidate for our next player added to the top 10 once potentially Bo Naylor or Gavin Williams graduates. Now, that's going to be a minute. Bo has played at least enough that he could drop off sooner than Gavin. So it's probably going to be, as long as they both stay at the MLB level, and I think they will, it'll probably be about 3 podcasts from now. But I've definitely got our candidate for the first player to take one of their spots in our top 10.
Okay, so. I think I might know who it is.
All right.
I won't give anything away.
Okay. Well, you probably will give it away because we're going to talk about our top 5 players of the week. And this guy's number 1 on our list. His name, Jason Churio. For those of you unaware, he is an extremely talented international prospect that Cleveland signed. And if that last name sounds familiar, his brother, Jackson Churio, is currently, let me double check here, MLB Pipeline's number 3 prospect in all of baseball. And the only players ahead of him right now are Ellie De La Cruz, who's going to graduate soon, and Jackson Holliday. So pretty soon he'll be the number 2 prospect in all of baseball. And that's his brother. So Jason Churio, he had a pretty good stretch here in the past 2 weeks. He batted .400, .605. With a .440 slugging, good for a .194 WRC+. BAPIP was .526. Hit a double, 9 singles, walked 13 times in 38 plate appearances. Good for a 34.2 walk percentage, and he's still hitting the ball. So this is not just a guy being passive. This is just a guy that has really good recognition at the plate and is selective on the pitches he's swinging at. So really exciting player.
Moving right along.
Oh,
at number 2, we have it.
Oh, I thought you'd have something to say about him.
You gave a pretty good rundown, and it's hard not to be excited about those numbers.
Yeah, I'll add, he's 18 years old at the Arizona Complex League. I think right now he has the 3rd or 4th highest WRC+ of any player in the Arizona Complex League. And he has the number 1 WRC+ of any player 18 or younger. So that is super exciting because his brother took off last year and I think started in the Arizona Complex League and advanced to high A by the end of the season and hit the hell out of the ball at every level as he just continued getting promoted. And that's why he exploded up the rankings, because he did that as an 18-year-old. Well, Jason Chirio is currently doing this as an 18-year-old. He is following in Big Bro's footsteps, which is super, super exciting. And if he can keep this up, I mean, we're not talking top 10. We're talking, you know, top 5, top 3 prospects in the system, especially with all of our elite pitchers graduating.
Knowing how sibling rivalries can occasionally fuel performance, I think he should make it to Double A this year just to show his big brother up, personally.
That's unlikely, but would be hilarious if they just promote him and then he does even better at Lynchburg. And
that would be a spectacular run at his age. But he's going to be really exciting to keep an eye on, too. And so, speaking of baseball pedigrees, who's the next guy on the list?
All right. This would be Luis Aparicio. That name sounds familiar. I believe there was a Hall of Fame player named Luis Aparicio. And this is his great nephew, which would mean, I think, his brother's grandson.
Yeah, I got very excited when I saw that they signed him. For obvious reasons, I guess. No, he plays outfield, unlike the elder Aparicio.
Yeah, I think the elder was a shortstop.
Possibly the best fielding shortstop ever, depending on whom you ask. It's a contentious question.
But what's interesting is he this is his second season, and he is repeating in the DSL, because last year as a 17-year-old in the DSL, he had a WRC plus of 57 on the one, because Cleveland has two teams in the DSL. He had a WRC plus of 57 on the one team and 74 on the other. So definitely had a little bit of a learning curve. But this year in the DSL, his WRC plus on the season is 149. So that's a lot better. It's 1.5 times.
Very good.
The other players. His slash line over the last 2 weeks, 429, 469, and then 643. So doing a little bit of slugging. WRC plus over the 2 weeks is 176, with a 429 BABIP, only a 3.1 strikeout percentage. I'm liking that. Walk percentage, just 6.3%. But out of his 12 hits in 28 at-bats, he had 7 singles, 4 doubles, a triple, stole 2 bases, walked twice, was hit by a pitch, doing a little bit of everything. So that's exciting.
I hope, against hope, that that's a true indicator of his eye at the plate, because the elder Aparicio did not strike out much at all either. Typically, he would draw more or about as many walks every season as strikeouts, and it would just be kind of neat. Like, it's a family trait. They don't strike out.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I like that.
Like, power, sure, but not getting struck out?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a gene for it. I don't know. There's a lot about the genome we don't know.
Well, moving on, we've got another legacy player.
Jose Devers is his name. He hails from the Dominican Republic. No, I'm drawing a blank on who he's related to, which is silly.
Well, there is a current MLB player whose name is Devers.
Rafael Devers?
He is his cousin.
Okay.
So the cousin of elite current Red Sox third baseman Rafael Devers. Jose Devers is, I think, maybe I have this wrong, because there is also a Jose Devers in the Marlins system that's his cousin. So is ours this also his cousin? So hang on.
So I'm seeing Jose Devers on the Marlins is related to Rafael Devers.
Okay, apparently, yes. This Jose also is Rafael Devers' cousin, according to, unless Cleveland.com was reporting incorrectly.
Hey, three's company. In any case, he had a very spicy slash line for the week. Put up 424, 472, 545. That's a WRC plus of 191.
Like that. And he did that at Lynchburg. So at full season ball.
Managed to steal three bases. Had three walks against six strikeouts.
Did not get caught.
Batted in five. Four doubles. Nice. It's a good week.
Very good
week. Not drawing a ton of walks, but when you're putting the ball in play like that, who cares?
Exactly. And I believe he's having a nice little season here. Let me double check. Average. It's his best season so far out of the three he's played. But his WRC plus on the season is 88. So still, you know, a work in progress. But considering last year, his WRC plus was 72 at the Complex League. And the year before, he also was in the Complex League with a 68 WRC plus. The fact that he is improving after getting promoted is a good sign. And he's stealing a lot of bases this year. He's 23, which his previous season high was 6.
They have set him loose. So,
yeah, he is running ragged.
Very good couple of weeks. And
he's also has his lowest strikeout percentage of his career. So after getting promoted. So that's exciting.
Might be another interesting player to keep tabs on as I consider future corner cupboard selections. Who is the next man?
Okay, this next guy has one of my favorite names of anybody in our Dominican system. Now, Welvin Francisca is a great name.
It's very good.
This guy, Yankee Baptiste. It just rolls off the tongue, man. He was known as a power-hitting international prospect, debuting in the DSL this year. And he's doing that. So his slash line over the last 2 weeks is 294. 600.
Okay.
824. So WRC plus was 235. So 2.35 times the next best player. And then hit only five hits. But out of those five hits, one single, one double, one triple, two home runs. He had more home runs than singles.
Yes. And in walks and stolen bases. Yes. More home runs than singles. And they should both be around 70. Why not?
And this is, I think, as a 17-year-old. Let me double check how old he is. Now, he is 18 years old. So this is his second season at the Dominican Summer League. But I don't think he's staying for long. Because last year, he was league average. He had a 95 WRC plus. This year, 209.
He's slugging 710 through 10 games.
Yeah.
He's breaking the game.
Yeah, he's already got three homers and two triples and a double in 10 games. And on top of that, 10 walks and three hit by pitches in his six games that he had over the last 2 weeks. That's more than two getting on base without an at bat per game. Stole three more bases on top of that. So super, super dominant, beastly performance. Get this man to the Arizona Complex League. He is also a middle infielder / third baseman that is a switch hitter. So
they keep doing it.
Yep. Another exciting infield prospect.
One thing, and this isn't meant to be speculation about Yankee Baptiste, but I wonder if in some situations there's a little bit of a delay in moving someone from the Dominican Summer League who's this young, just because of maturity feels like a harsh word to use, but maybe they want to wait and give them a little bit more time to be personally ready.
I mean, it is a difficult transition. You're coming to live in the United States. On the bright side, in Arizona, you're going to be surrounded by a lot of guys speaking Spanish. Because most of our players on those teams are international prospects, because we don't draft a ton of high schoolers. So I think it's not as difficult as we're making it out to be. And I think he's ready. I mean, most guys, you know, that are his age, if they had a better season the year before, he would have debuted in Arizona this year. So I think I definitely think he's getting promoted to Arizona at some point, though.
Fair enough. And if he keeps slugging 700, 800, there's no excuses.
Absolutely.
He's got to move up.
Well,
it's not fair to everyone else. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about our final player and our only pitcher on our top five players of the week.
Rodney Boone. In a couple of games started for Mr. Boone, He went 10 innings, struck out 18. 10 and two-thirds innings, struck out 18. Only walked one. Just straight-up filthy dominant stuff. That's 15 strikeouts per nine. 42 is his strikeout percentage.
And then an 18 strikeout-to-walk ratio. That's just pretty good.
It's silly. And he's repeating high A this year after starting at A and then and moving up to high A halfway through the season last year. Looking like he's having a pretty nice bounce back. You had mentioned that he was a guy you were keeping an eye on at the start of this season.
He was ridiculous at Lynchburg last year. In 10 starts, he had a 1.85 ERA and was striking out 11.6 batters per nine, walking just 1.4. And then he got promoted and he struggled. He had a 4.8 ERA. The strikeout rate dropped to 1.5. The walk rate doubled. And this year, actually, and last year also, he went from giving up 0.3 home runs per nine innings to 2.2 at high A. This year, they repeated him at high A. And while his numbers on the surface level are not great, you know, ERA is 5.9 on the season, his FIP is actually significantly lower. Like, the FIP is 4.6, the XFIP is 3.3, which is a lot closer to what his numbers were in Lynchburg. And it seems like he's also really starting to turn it around recently. So that's great to see. His last start in particular, I think he went like 5 shutout innings with 9 strikeouts. So if he can keep that up, you know, he could be a guy that reaches double A by the end of the season. So that's what I'm looking forward to. He was an 8th round pick in 2021 also, for those interested. That was the draft that netted us Tanner Bibee and Gavin Williams. And also guys like Will Dion, Jack Leftwich, and Rodney Boone, as well as Doug Nikhazy, Tommy Mace. So a lot of guys at that high A, double A level right now from that draft class. So seems like he went through it a little bit, but he's figuring it out, and he's looking like could be interesting. Another left-handed pitcher too.
That I wasn't aware of. That gets me even more excited. Feels not common for us to have lefties in the system, so yes.
And he was pretty young when we drafted him for a college junior. He still just turned 23 years old, so I think he's in a pretty good spot. So look, just hoping he can maintain some of that recent dominance, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Mm-hmm. Just to do a quick apples to apples, interesting that he's 23, because the other UC Santa Barbara alum currently with the Guardians is Shane Bieber. He actually made his debut on his 23rd birthday, if Baseball Reference is correct. I didn't remember that it was his birthday. Wild.
Hmm.
In any case, there's a weird West Coast pipeline that the Guardians seem to have with college pitchers. And by weird, I mean kind of awesome.
Yeah, I did not know Rodney Boone was a UC Santa Barbara guy. For some reason, I always thought it was Bibee, but he must have been a different California.
He might have been a banana slug.
He was Cal State Fullerton. Okay, gotcha.
What is Cal State Fullerton? Oh, Tuffy the Titan. Oh, how could you forget Tuffy? How could I forget Tuffy the Titan? That's absurd. I feel bad.
All good.
We should move to the corner cupboard. I'm getting my obscure baseball mascots all mixed up.
All right, moving on to the corner cupboard. For those that are unaware, this is players that are not currently in the covering the corner top 20 prospects that we think we should be keeping an extra eye on. So we pick one position player and one pitcher to follow along through the season. We can dump them off our list and add somebody else at any moment, which Matt did. Let's start with Matt, your position player, Mr. Daniel Schneemann, who we were hyping up last week with a top 5 player of the week performance.
I continue to be excited. Now, he slashed 268, 388, 268. So our guy went ahead and hit 11 singles for all 11 of his hits. But we choose to focus on the 388 on base percentage, and it's not as if we're necessarily expecting that Schneemann's going to be a big power bat at any point. But overall, that was still good for an 84 WRC plus at AAA. And this is in the middle of a season where he's pretty much been one of the, if not the best and most consistent bats in the Clippers lineup. In those 11 games, like I said, 11 hits, 6 walks, had a run driven in and came around to score 3 times. Got hit by 2 pitches. There we go. Taking it for the team. I feel like we were in this position with Ernie Clement at one point where he just sort of continued to play very well at the upper minor league levels. And Schneeman being 26 and a half years old at this point, we don't necessarily expect him to be a guy who comes up and makes a huge impact at the major league level.
Mm-hmm.
But David Fry's been doing David Fry things this season, and he sort of popped up out of nowhere after he came into the system, thanks to some interesting sets of weeks at AAA. So we'll see. There's so many infielders in the mix for playing time right now that he's kind of in a tough spot. But this is also, he's got a 4 at the front of his on-base percentage for the year. And as we continue through the season, maybe he's a guy that draws interest from other teams. Lord knows people like Oakland and Kansas City can use good baseball players. So I don't know, Brian. Tell me about Joe Lampe.
Maybe I can skip Joe. Okay, I'm not, but he did not have a good 2-week stretch.
It was difficult.
Yeah, he is on the struggle bus right now. After an extremely hot start to his pro career, over the last 2 weeks, he slashed 0.088, 200, 0.118 with a WRC plus of 4. Not 400, 4.
4.
Yeah, BABIP was 125, strikeout rate 27.5, walk rate 10, played 10 games, made 40 plate appearances, and got just 3 hits. Did walk 4 times, stole a base, but yeah, not great. 3 hits, one of those was a double, so just not pretty.
Did you read his BABIP?
Yeah, 125.
Okay. So we've talked recently about if someone has a BABIP up around 500. Yes, part of that's luck, but yes, they're probably also murdering the ball. I wonder if the same might be true for a line like this at 125, where very difficult for all of that to just be bad luck on good contact, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure what's going on with him right now. Maybe he's trying, pressing. I don't know. I haven't really seen him in action. I haven't been watching the Lake County games, so I really couldn't tell you. I just know that, he's did not have a good 2-week stretch.
To speculate wildly.
Yeah, I'll speculate wildly and say that maybe it had something to do with the fact that he hit a couple home runs, and maybe, he started to showcase a little power, and now he's trying to hit the ball out of the park every time. I don't know.
Again, I was going to say the
complete wild speculation.
I think the summer solstice threw off his chakras, personally.
There you go.
Got to be standing in the right place when it happens. Everyone knows this, obviously.
Of course.
How did your pitcher do?
Parker Messick had 2 starts. WHIP was 0.77. Had a 27.3% strikeout rate, 9.26 K per 9. Pitched 11 and 2/3 innings, allowed 3 runs, 2 earned, good for a 1.54 ERA, struck out 12, walked 3, gave up just 6 hits. Just really, really impressive performance. And everyone was going, why is he still at Lynchburg? Why is he still at Lynchburg? Finally, it was announced he's going up to High A Lake County. Today was supposed to be his debut at High A, and the game got postponed due to, toxic air. So hopefully he's going to play tomorrow in a doubleheader instead.
But we really are kind of having an airborne toxic event, huh?
Yeah. But really, he is one of our only, super interesting pitching prospects that we drafted last season that's been pitching this year. all of our other, top guys like Justin Campbell, David DeLucia, Jacob Zibin, they're all out for the season with either Tommy John or Thoret or whatever the elbow surgery was that Campbell had. So that sucks, but at least Messick has been performing really well.
He's an exciting arm.
He is. And I guess we do have a high schooler that's been pitching in the ACL and has been doing good, named Jackson Humphreys. So he's another guy worth keeping an eye on. I was looking him up to see if potentially he was a top five of the week guy, but strikeout numbers are good. He's given up, getting hit a little bit, but 17 strikeouts in 11 innings pitched compared to 6 walks. So not bad. ERA is not great for, like I said, he's given up some hits, but definitely an exciting young arm. And he was an 8th round pick out of high school. So he's 18 years old, pitching in the Arizona Complex League right now.
Very cool. Yeah, and with a young arm like that, who cares how many guys he walks in the Complex League? I mean, of course you do, but there's a lot of time to review and tinker. And I don't actually know anything about pitching development other than things I've figured out by paying attention to stuff. But I'm just going to go right into Jack Leftwich because I don't have an exit for that.
All right, let's hear it.
He had one game started, pitched an inning.
Okay.
Gave up a hit, which was also a home run, resulting in an earned run. And then he got pulled and is now on the injured list. So I was curious to know if you knew what ended up happening to Mr. Leftwich. I did a little bit of searching here before we started the podcast, but was unable to find anything other than he was transferred to the IL.
Yeah, I believe it had something to do with a shoulder.
No. I think
shoulder strain is what I was told. So you know what, though? At least that explains why he has not been pitching well this year. If that makes you feel better, it's not that he's just suddenly bad. Seems like, you know, it's been something that's possibly been bothering him a little bit all season, and it finally just flared up to the point where he needed to go on the injured list. Hopefully it doesn't require, you know, any surgical intervention, but at least, you know, we have an explanation for why somebody that was so great last year has struggled so much this year.
This is where I get in my head about how long did he feel it?
Mm-hmm.
Was he trying to pitch through it a little too much? I can't sit here looking at numbers and try to decide that, though. But we will hope for good news and hope for better health for him moving forward.
Exactly. And Mr. Leftwich, let's see. I know he had one really good start, but for the most part, he's had a tough season. Yes. In June 3rd, he pitched 6 shutout innings. So that was a really good moment. And that's really been one of his few good starts all season. That's the only time he went more than 4 innings all year.
The only other one I wanted to call out was June 11th. He had 4 innings pitched, only gave up 1 run, but 2 strikeouts and a balk, which just for the embarrassment factor, at least erases those 2 strikeouts. You can't be up there doing a balk. Anyway, we will hope for better health and better things for Leftwich moving forward. Hopefully, I do not have to make a temporary replacement due to injury to my cupboard, but we will see.
Well, moving on, speaking of injuries, let's talk about all the transactions going on in the Cleveland minor league system. We'll try to make this quick. We'll start with all the players that were injured. So obviously, Jack Leftwich, we just talked about in Akron. Ryan Webb is another one. Another really interesting arm placed on the 7-day injured list in Lake County. This was not a shoulder or elbow or anything, which is great news because he was a guy recovering from Tommy John surgery last year. And instead, he is dealing with an oblique injury. So, and you know, that's something that can be nagging and annoying, but is not anything that is going to cause any long-term issues. And Luis Oviedo was placed on the 7-day injured list in Columbus. Now, in terms of other activations, people that got healthy, George Valera is in Columbus. Chase DeLauder got activated and sent to Lake County, where he will debut very shortly. Outfielder Angel Zarate was activated and sent back to Lynchburg. And Ross Carver, if you remember, a right-handed pitcher who we received in the Carlos Vargas trade, was activated and sent back to Akron. In terms of promotions, we had one big one, Parker Messick, we just talked about, sent to Lake County, will be making his debut tomorrow, weather permitting. And then Bo Naylor and Gavin Williams promoted to the major league roster. So, woo!
It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's it for injuries and transactions. And I believe that brings us to the end of this edition of the Around the Corner podcast.
Well, we typically do one last thing before we close things out, don't we?
I do have a selection from Universal Poet Laureate E.E. Gammings.
If please, do tell. Share.
Okay. One potentially wearable pitcher who is suddenly throwing like an ashamed television is Jose Soriano, whose big change can be traced to a Fig Newton he found while touring some Walmarts on winter vacation in France.